Back in house, and as you may recall if you heard last Friday's show, Idaho-born and bred singer-songwriter Josh Ritter spent last weekend playing shows in Boise and Stanley, just his second and third performances ever in the state. I caught up with Ritter lakeside after his performance at Redfish Lake near Stanley. I begin by asking him about the relatively late moment he decided he wanted to be a musician.
I had been playing violin for a while.
Okay.
And you know, I never realized that I didn't like it. I didn't realize, because I didn't have anything to compare it to, and nobody else in my family played music. And I think everybody has this in high school where they're looking for something that they're good at, you know? And I hadn't really found that yet. I was looking, you know, we were talking about wrestling. I was a terrible wrestler. And I tried out for 4 years to be on the basketball team, and that didn't work out so well. And one day, you know, I lived way out of town, and my parents had a few records, but they didn't have, the record player had never been plugged in that I remembered. And one day I plugged in the record player, and I put on this record just because it was the one that it looked cool. It was a picture of this guy, and he had a guitar, and he was smiling, and it said Nashville Skyline.
Uh-huh.
And it was a Bob Dylan record, and I put it on because, you know, it looked cool, and because Johnny Cash was on it, and I'd remembered hearing that Johnny Cash said that Potlatch, Idaho was the meanest town he ever played. So I put it on, and it was incredible. It was like a, you know, I wasn't old enough to go to any of the grunge shows, and, you know, I'd never really grown up around any, like, punk music or anything like that. I didn't know anybody that knew that stuff, and I put that record on, and that was like, to me, like, that was like listening to punk music, you know?
Right,
it was
right.
Like, or Elvis or something. It was like the chance to see that, like, no matter what, you could just play, and it didn't have to be perfect. It just had to be real, you know?
Right, right.
And it sounded like those guys had just been playing all night and just trying stuff out. And it was out of tune, and it was awesome. And the next day, I'd never played guitar, and the next day I went out and I bought a guitar, and I started teaching myself to play Girl from the North Country, which was the song they sang. And I was having trouble with it, and I started finding that it was easier for me to write songs than for me to learn them at that point. So I taught myself the D chord and the G chord, and I started writing songs from there. You know?
Like that?
It was like really quick. I bought my guitar at Kmart, and it was instant. It was like I felt like I understood it, or it felt like something that was approachable to me. Because
right.
Nobody could tell you. There's no team you have to be on. You know, you just do what you do, and you do your best. You know.
So up to then, I mean, had you, were you the kind of kid that wrote? Creatively before?
I wrote and I read a lot, and uh-huh. I was told, like, you know, just, you know, kind of. I don't think I was introverted, but I just didn't feel like I had anything that I was like, I felt like there was a lot, like you do, you know, you feel like there's a part of you that's not being addressed, you know?
Right, right.
And that was, I don't know, I think I would be a far different person if I hadn't listened to that record that day, for sure.
But yeah, you went out to Oberlin College, and you were still, you were still planning on a career in the neuroscience.
Yeah.
You had a moment out there where you kind of decided and told your parents about it.
I was. My parents both teach at Washington State. They're both professors there in science, and I thought, like, you know, it's
the family biz.
Yeah, totally. And I figured, like, well, you know, musicians. The only musicians I'd ever really, you know, seen were pretty cartoonish. You know, there was like, or that I knew. You know, I love that Janet Jackson song "Secret Rendezvous." You know, I love that stuff. That's not like what you think about when you start playing songs. You know, and I love the Oak Ridge Boys and all uh-huh. this stuff. So when I started playing music, I figured, oh, this is not a real career. This is just like something that I like to do, and I'll do it on the weekends, and I'll be like, you know, Buckaroo Banzai, and I'll
right.
do like science during the week, and I'll play songs on the weekend. And,
weekend warrior.
Yeah, totally. And then when I realized that I was not gonna be a scientist, I realized that, like, what I really loved to do was play music. You know,
right.
And that if I didn't do that, I was wasting my time.
Picture they took of you in your cowboy hat makes you look like you were one of the boys out on a Saturday night. Meanwhile, oh yeah. outside of the dance hall. I'm a joke that you'd probably enjoy. On the outside of Memphis, all the buildings look big, and the white picket fences are there to charge around the lawn and hold their heads up high. When my headlights find them out, they'll be the first to put their hands in the air with my radio on. Oh, singing a country song, soft and low. So living on the edge of the city limit line, this is where the boundary finally ends. And I swear that we're the last living souls in a populated ghost town. All the billboards are our best friends. Oh, which way did our last chance go, and can we get out if we go right now? 'Cause it seems that with the malls and the megachurch stadiums, we would get out if we knew just how, with a radio. All singing a country song, soft and low. Ooh, and I got a worried mind, I know. I hear the ghost of Patsy Cline on the Grand Ole Opry show. Self-help book signed off on by a reverend to Shasta converted. Have mercy on this boy, did it all by the book. Still kind of has his doubts. Yeah, you look pretty good in that junk wheel dress, but your smile is a wooden nickel's pride. And I know that it ain't worth much. It feels good to touch, and I think that I could dance if I try with your radio. Oh, singing a country song, soft and low.
Speaking of today's gig, this is actually, well, it's your last U.S. appearance for a little while.
Yeah.
You're heading over to Ireland in a bit for a series of dates over there.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And then you're coming back and doing some opening slots for Jamie Collum. But you're big. You're big in Ireland, to paraphrase Tom Waits.
Yeah, totally.
It's been that way for a while. I mean, you know, you're getting a name here in the U.S., but you've been over, big over there for a while. What do you think explains...
Well, that's the first place I started playing, and that's the only thing I can think of, you know, because I think people aren't different anywhere. Like, it's just a matter of where they experience what you're doing, you know? And I got lucky because I started playing over there. I was invited over by a band called The Frames. I was playing open mics in Boston, and I got invited over by this band, and I started playing and actually playing shows. And, you know, from there it kind of expanded to being some stuff in the States, and then I started playing in England and around Europe, and it just sort of happened that way, you know? Like, I think that it got big there first, and you know, it's just something that happens.
For whatever reason.
For whatever reason, yeah, yeah. Who knows why?
You captured the zeitgeist at the time, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And I got started in a time when there was a lot of great stuff happening there, like, you know, like Damien Rice and David Gray had started, and, like, you know, there was a bunch of people that were just really starting to, like, to show that you could do that stuff, and right. I didn't know those guys from Adam, but
sure.
But I just, you know, it seemed like something where I could do it, you know?
More of our interview with Josh Ritter from the Redfish Lake Lodge in Stanley, Idaho, when we come back in-house. Back as we rejoin the interview with Josh Ritter, conducted Sunday night after his performance in Stanley, Idaho, and I asked him about his decision to record with the producer Brian Deck, who had previously worked with the likes of Modest Mouse for his newest album, The Animal Years.
When I first started, I never really worked with a real producer before, like, you know, and when they said I could talk to a producer, I could start working with a producer, when I had the budget to do it, I didn't really know what to do, because I didn't know really what a producer did, you know?
Right.
I have my own, like, pretty, like, specific ideas about, like, what I want my music to sound like. And so I started to worry about, like, you know, fights and like, you know, getting my music taken away from me, you know?
Sure, sure.
And I also don't really like it, this idea of producers. Producers are such celebrities now that it's sort of like, it'd be kind of like if you wrote a novel and you were the author, but the editor got, like, you know, they got first billing. So that I was got offered a bunch of different producers that were, like, really big, and I, you know, I talked to a lot of those guys, and I just thought this is bull, you know. I don't need these guys, like. And I talked to Brian Deck, and they were all like, they all said, you know, you need to get this done and this done and this done and this thing, you know, you can do a lot, you know. And I always thought, like, when I talked to Brian Deck, he said, yeah, these are weird songs, and well, I don't know what's going to happen. And I like that a lot more, because he's such a weirdo, you know. And I mean, he's just an interesting person who thinks about music in a strange way. He thinks, you know, like Iron and Wine is pop music, you know.
Right, right.
Or like Modest Mouse is pop music, but like, The Moon in Antarctica is the one of the strangest records, and so I just really like the fact that he goes into it like he's exploring something, like, I mean, he's like going on safari, you know, and whatever happens is going to be interesting no matter what, and it's a weird way to spend a lot of money, but it's like a lot of fun, you know, like, yeah. It's a great time.
So in a way, it was almost kind of a deliberate move away from, you know, something a little more traditional to something a little maybe less traditional sound.
Yeah.
Kind of genre bending, maybe.
Yeah, well, I it just bothers me. I think there's a lot of... I don't think it's enough to just write a song, you know. I think you should have... There should be more there, and there should be something interesting, because everybody's written a song about a relationship, you know. Like, that's fine and everything, but it's not just enough to have a good chorus, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it is, and it's like, you know... But there's always got to be something else there, and what I liked about him was that he made me feel like this is the beginning of something, and not like this is your shot at like this is your shot. He didn't make me feel like this is your shot at, like, something,
right,
yeah,
right,
being
right.
Big or something. It was like more of like this is where things could get really interesting, you know.
And they do. And
yeah,
they do. I mean, you know, you've got a 9-minute song. That's really not immediately accessible to people.
No.
You're looking for immediately accessible.
It's not going to get very much airplay. But
right. But then New Flame, I mean, talk a little bit about that, if you would, and
yeah.
Just how that came about. I mean, it's such a, just a storm of words and thoughts. And
well, it's a, when I was on the road with Hello Starling, I started to feel like I was, you know, I had no time to myself. And so I started running, and I started doing these runs, and the runs kind of got longer, and I started, when I run, I start to think about stuff, and some of the words come into my head, and I start to try and figure out what, you know, what was getting me, what was making me angry at the time, you know, with George Bush being elected for the second time, and wars that weren't making a lot of sense to me, you know, I didn't understand them, and mm-hmm. And I started to realize, and then, you know, as I was running, I was listening to a lot of people that were playing, and I started to be like, everybody seems to have an answer, and I don't, you know. Everybody seems to know exactly, whether you're Toby Keith or Steve Earle, exactly what's going on, you know. Like, they seem to know, and I, you know, and I think, like, sometimes that's what bothers me about that, is not that they know, which is great. If they feel that conviction, that's phenomenal for them. But for me, I feel like most of the poetry got robbed out of the whole situation, you know, and I think that's important to have poetry in a time like this, because that's, for me, that's how I figure stuff out, and so I started thinking, like, okay, well, if they're singing about songs about total conviction, I want a record about confusion, and that's why I wrote, like, you know, Girl in the War and Thin Blue Flame, because they're about They're about being so confused about the world that you kind of have to narrow it down to a single person or a single family and say, all this can happen, but you know, everything else can hang, you know. But I'm gonna throw in my lot with these people, you know, whether it's like the town of Moscow or whether it's like, you know, a single person who you know you can help, you know.
Right.
And that's what Thimble Flame is about. I definitely feel like that. Sometimes we get so concerned with going to heaven that we forget about the fact that there's a lot of heaven here on earth, and that's, I think that's so important to realize, you know.
And over hills and fields I flew, wrapped up in a royal blue. I flew over Royal City last night. We're fighting the horns of a new moonlight. Caesar's ghost, I saw the wartime tides. The Prince of Denmark's father still and quiet. The whole world was looking to get drowned. Trees were a fifth, shaking themselves at the clouds. I looked over curtains, oh, it's then that I knew that only a full house gonna make it through. I became a thin blue wire that held the world above the fire. And so it was I saw behind heaven's just a thin blue line. If God's up there, he's in a cold dark room. The heavenly hosts are just the cold dark moons. He bent down and made the world in 7 days. And ever since he's been walking away, mixing with nitrogen and lonely holes, where neither seraphim or raindrops go. I see an old man wandering the halls alone, but only a full house gonna make a home. And I became a thin blue stream the smoke between a sleep and dreams. And in that clear blue undertow, saw Royal City far below, border soft with refugees, streets swimming with amputees. It's a Bible or a bullet they put over your heart. It's getting harder and harder to tell them apart. The days are nights and the nights are long. Beating hearts blossom into walking bombs. And though still looking in the clear blue sky for a sign, get missiles from so high they might as well be divine. And now the dogs are howling at your door, singing about vengeance like it's the joy of the Lord. Bringing justice to the enemies, not the other way around. They're guilty where killed, and they're killed where they're found. If what's loosed on earth will be loosed up on high, it's a hell of a heaven we must go to when we die. Where even Laurel begs Hardy for vengeance, please. The fat man's crying on his hands and his knees. Back in the peacetime, he caught roses on the stage. Now a twist and decision takes bourbon for rage. Like pellets, pepper, and aluminum. Halcyon, laudanum, and opium. Sings kiss the hearty, this poison cup. His wine and sheen is busy wiring up. In darkness, he looks for the lights that have died. You need faith for the same reasons that it's so hard to find. And this whole thing is headed for a terrible wreck. And like a tragedy, that's what we expect.
Josh Ritter's Thin Blue Flame from his latest, The Animal Years, easily the most complex moment on the album. It's a 9.5-minute opus, and it represents kind of a movement away from regular narrative structure on the new album. However, there's also a handful of songs on the new one that showed he's improved with his narrative structure as well. One of those, the Sorry Song, Lily in Egypt. I asked him if there was some kind of personal story behind that tune.
it's just an idea, actually. I think I was like, I really like those silent films, and there's a lot of silent film stuff I was thinking about for the record, and I always liked those Lillian Gish silent film.
Right,
she is
right.
An amazing person to watch on film, and she had her time before, you know, really kind of before the talkies came.
Right,
and, like,
right.
And I really liked her. I mean, she would be the one for me if I was if I was around in the 20s.
The video really captures it too.
Yeah,
you know,
thanks.
That
yeah.
Early, and you got your starring role in the silent film.
Yeah, right? Finally.
Your
yeah,
debut,
I've been auditioning for years. Yeah.
I remember back in Illinois, I found her, the lily of the valley, the lily of the west was a rose, the daughter of the biggest big town banker. He kept her like a princess, I stole her like the Fort Knox gold. She used to pour roses like it's going down the chimney. The bottle was on fire, the boiler was about to blow. She's up on the table when we hit Missouri, dancing with the movie man, he's holding her a little too close.
It seems like you tour a lot. You've got dates scheduled for a few months out now.
Yeah,
you plan on slowing down with that? Or you pretty much been doing it.
Well, eventually I'm going to have to slow down because I want to have an actual relationship and you know, all that stuff that people have. But for right now, I'm pretty until that thing comes up and slaps me in the face. I'm gonna hang out and keep on playing. Keep as much as I know. I'm always going to tour. I know that.
And you just played your third show in Idaho today.
Yeah.
Hopefully, there's more of those to come.
Yeah,
too.
For sure, man.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. Man.
Well, Josh Ritter, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate
your guys.
Time. Best of luck down the road.
Man. Yeah, totally. Thank you, guys.
Special thanks once again to Josh Ritter for taking time out and joining us for an interview. You can find more content featuring Ritter, including photos from Sunday's performance at Redfish Lake, on the website. It's at InHouseRadio.com. rap.blogspot.com. Additional thanks goes to Ryan Peck for making the interview possible, and technical assistance from Jamin Anderson, Dylan Anderson, and Sean Murdoch. We're back in house right after this.